Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage takes the frustrations out of getting a mortgage by letting you safely share your financial information with the touch of a button. Get approved online in minutes at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A lot of people love sushi all over these days. Some won't touch it. Many have to have it. But what is sushi now, and can it last? In the age of sushi burritos, some traditionalists are saying enough with the experimentation, and some environmentalists are saying, where are we going to get the fish? This hour On Point, the past, present, and future of sushi. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you a sushi lover? What pulls you in? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Seiji Imura, chef at Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. His parents opened the cafe in 1984. He took it over in 1997. It happens to be a local favorite of mine. Seiji Imura, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Great to be here, Tom. Thank you. Such an honor and pleasure.
It's such a great pleasure for me. Believe me, we've got sushi in the studio, and the smell of all these ingredients is filling my nostrils right now. It's kind of making me crazy with happiness. And with us, Seiji, via Skype, from Paulsbo, Washington, is Hajime Sato, chef and owner of Mashiko, a fully sustainable sushi restaurant in Seattle. Born in Japan, moved to Seattle after high school in 1989, learned to make sushi there. Hajime Sato, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hello, Tom. Yeah, thank you.
It is just terrific to have you both. I have to admit, I know people are all over the map on sushi, though these days it seems like it's got such wide acceptance. I lived for 5 years in Japan, in the heart of Tokyo, and it made me a true believer. We've got a beautiful sushi spread that Seiji has made for us here in Boston, Hajime. And by the way, Hajime, say hi to Seiji Mura. Hi to Hajime Sato.
Hajime-san, how are you?
おはようございます。おはようございます。
Hajime Masuda is all around here. I'm really glad to have both of you here. There's a lot we're going to taste. There's a lot we're going to talk about. I guess the one place I want to begin, and Seiji, I'll start with you here in the studio in Boston. We were down at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia, and there was a food truck there. First time for me personally that I had seen sushi burritos. And it just got us thinking about all the crazy directions in which sushi is going these days. I mean, you can see now, you know, sushi burgers, sushi donuts I saw someplace online, sushi all over the place. What do you think of the way the definition of sushi has been stretched and stretched? I'm looking here at a place in Mississippi called the Southern Sushi Juke Joint Fish Taqueria Neighborhood Pub Deli. And then as part of their sushi, they serve crawfish sushi, shrimp and tuna. But in their case, they now cook the fish and still call it sushi. How wide can you stretch the definition and still have it be sushi?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's great to see people's take on sushi. It's really showing that it's become mainstream and it's really becoming appealing for all audiences. And I think that's great. Sushi really at the basic is about the rice. So you can really turn anything into sushi as long as there's the sushi rice that's present.
And sushi rice is, remind everybody, people who may not eat it or may eat it and do not know, what makes rice sushi rice?
It is seasoned with some vinegar, salt, sugar, and then whatever other recipe ingredients that each specific sushi house decides to put in it.
So I've been many times to your restaurant. You've got rolls there that it can be really interesting, go in different directions, but you don't take it all the way out to sushi burrito and sushi donuts.
Not quite yet. We like to keep it somewhat classic and then do some creative sort of riffs off of sushi to keep it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think it's great to see chefs have their own self-expression with different cuisines. And I think that's what's happening here. And it's just showing you and showing everyone how sushi's really infiltrated mainstream America.
Yeah. Hajime Sato, your restaurant's in Seattle. It's all about sustainability. But before we get to that, what about the mere boundaries of what sushi is? Are you comfortable seeing how wide they've been stretched in the American market?
That's a kind of two-way question, meaning that you just told me about how people are cooking the fish. But if you look at the beginning of the sushi, of course, that the this raw fish is a sushi was not there because that the so many people think that the sushi is raw fish. But if you think about it, there's no refrigeration, there's no freezer. So people used to cook.
A century ago or more, yeah, in Japan.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So many people used to do is ferment the fish or cook the fish or brine the fish or, put in vinegar or some kind of form. So from that point of view, raw fish is the more modern style, even in Japan, if you really think about it. So what is the stretch? I don't know. That's a tough thing because even in Japan, probably you lived in Japan and
yes.
So many like ramen and Chinese food is completely different from China. And we have their own ramen and gyoza and stuff like that. That's
sure.
Different.
Imported from China. But what about sushi in Japan, Hajime? Is it also in this kind of evolution going off in all directions? Or do the Japanese say, no, it's traditional or we don't recognize it?
So what is tradition, right? Even nigiri sushi is created probably 120, 150 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Right? So from that point of view, what we're eating is really kind of nouveau sushi to Japan.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it's tough to kind of think about it, what is tradition, what is not. And I just read that the even tuna, right? So many people think it's tuna. It's really like, oh my God, tuna has to be in sushi. But even 100 years ago, mm-hmm. tuna was considered one of the lowest grade of the fish. And if you have tuna in the sushi bar, it's considered the lowest grade.
Wow.
Like people wouldn't go. So from that point of view, then what is tradition? What is not? What is sushi grade? What is not? It's really completely, you have to rethink.
That's mind-blowing that tuna was considered low-class sushi. I've got beautiful sushi on the tabletop here in the studio that Seiji Imura has brought in. And I got tuna right here from nigiri tuna. Describe, define, what do I have? What am I holding in my fingers? And by the way, in my fingers, not chopsticks. That's the way they do it in Japan. What have I got here, Seiji?
It's tuna nigiri, exactly how you said it. So
nigiri
it's a
meaning
piece
the traditional sort of oval of rice under the fish.
Right. The raw fish, it's over a bed of sushi rice.
And the learning how to prepare the rice so it holds together just right, so it's got just the right flavor, big deal.
Absolutely. I mean, again, the rice is the basis of sushi, so it's about the texture, the temperature, and also the way it's seasoned. These are all very, very important things.
I am just downing my first beautiful nigiri sushi of this session. It's the tuna. There are different grades of tuna that you use in nigiri sushi. What's this?
So that one's actually yellowfin tuna.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the back side, so it's the red meat, akami.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's chutoro, which is the medium fatty tuna, usually found with the bluefin tuna,
mm-hmm.
and then the old toro, which is the fatty tuna belly part.
What's most popular in your restaurant here in the States?
Well, at Cafe Sushi, we actually try not to serve bluefin.
Mm-hmm.
So
sustainability issue.
Yeah, part of sustainability. We believe that it is a depleting kind of population, mm-hmm. so we try to stick with the yellowfin tuna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So basically just the red meat of the elephant tuna is what we serve.
Mm-hmm. And Hajime Sato, you're all focused on sustainability. Does that mean you're mm-hmm. able to serve some kinds of tuna or not?
We actually cut the entire red tuna at this moment. So we use the tombo, which is the Hawaiian albacore tuna. And albacore, of course, is much smaller mm-hmm. and they reproduce much faster. So that the, and of course, we have a local albacore. It's in a season right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that the, and it got a fat in it. So I can actually use that belly as a toro. So why use other tuna from like Cape Town or, you know, somewhere like Indian Ocean mm-hmm. if we have the tuna that we can get locally that's not big and reproduce really fast, sustainable.
So you've got it locally there, though many, many sushi restaurants. And Seiji Imura, I believe yours, you fly in fish from all the way from Japan, I believe, as well.
Yes.
Why do you do that? There's fish in all the oceans. Is it different there? What's the difference?
Unfortunately, I think the quality that we get from Japan is still superior to even wild local stuff that we get here in Boston, which is some of the best seafood in the world.
How can that be? Why? I mean, they're all fish from the sea. Does nature really discriminate? They make there's better fish swimming around Japan or wherever their fleets go?
Not at all. Not at all. I think it's just the way in which it's handled here. The infrastructure in Japan is better built for sashimi-grade fish from the fishermen all the way to the marketplace to the restaurant.
You mean the way it's literally handled and chilled and cut?
Absolutely. Fished. Mm-hmm. With the ikejime, which is the bloodletting to preserve the quality of mm-hmm. the fish.
Mm-hmm.
All these practices are still aren't being done here in America, which really helps in preserving the fish quality.
These are things that might not matter at a seafood restaurant, a regular Western-style seafood restaurant, but they matter for sushi.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know it's starting to really happen. I know in New York they started showing people how to do ikejime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's starting to happen here. And with all the crudos in American restaurants and sushi restaurants that are becoming more and more popular,
mm-hmm.
definitely I think that there's going to be a tendency for the quality of the fish that we can get locally will hopefully improve.
Hajime Sato, this began as street food in Japan, as you say, a century plus ago. Maybe not always raw when they didn't have refrigeration.
Right.
Is it as popular as ever in Japan today? I mean, people don't eat it all the time there, especially even in Japan. But is its Japanese popularity where it always was?
This is a kind of crazy thing. I was just watching the documentary about it and why sushi became popular. Of course, it's not about, you know, sushi chef just didn't explode, you know. So refrigeration and sushi robot and the freezer distribution system, that made sushi popular in Japan. So not because of the everybody started having a skill. So from that point of view, I don't know, you know, the quality got better or not. I think it's more the distribution issue. Yeah.
Hajime, hold the thought right there. In Paulsbo, Washington, just outside Seattle, where Hajime Sato's restaurant Mashko is. And with me in the studio here, Seiji Imura, chef at Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We're talking about the past, present, and future of sushi. You can join us. What's your question on sushi? Do you dream of sushi, of your nigiri, your maguro, your tekamaki, your California roll? Do you like it traditional, simple, and good? Do you like it wild? Mango rolls, salmon mozzarella, I saw rolls, sushi burritos. Here's the sushi song from Adam Buxton. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Give me California rolls and a load of futomaki custard egg. Nigiri with a warm bite of sake, bitter salmon, sashimi. Oh my gosh, it is so tender and I'm loading up with miso cause I'm on a sushi bender. I would like inari and some thin roll.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about the past, present, and future of sushi, the once exotic Japanese specialty now all over America and the world. The sound behind us right there of Tsukiji Fish Market, famous fish market in Tokyo. It's moved recently. There are other moves on the Japanese sushi front as well. We'll talk about them and, of course, here in the United States. With us today from Washington State, chef and owner of Mashiko Sustainable Sushi Restaurant in Seattle is Hajime Sato. Joins us today via Skype from Paulsbo, Washington. And with me in the studio with a very beautiful array of sushi on the table, and we've got to turn more to it, is Seiji Imura. He's chef at Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You can join our conversation this hour. Do you dream of sushi? Do you like it traditional? Do you like it new wave, sushi burritos and all the rest? Do you want it sustainable? What's that going to look like down the road or even right now? And what's your question for our sushi chefs on fish, on cuts, on flavors, on sushi learning and lore? We'll talk about sustainability here from the documentary Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Famous Japanese sushi chef Jiro says he began noticing a fish shortage when many common types of fish became more rare in fish markets. He says, back when I was younger, there was never a shortage of high-quality fish. In the past, I'd go to the market, see the big tuna that were just cut open, ask them to bring out the ones I like. That was true for any fish. You can't find fish like that anymore. On the other hand, you can find sushi presented in ways that Jiro may never have dreamed of. From Eat Street, the television show on Food Network, they went to check out Jogasaki Burrito, the food truck in L.A. that popularized sushi burritos. Basically, a giant roll of rice, fish, and veggies wrapped with nori and then finished with a tortilla or soy paper. Patrons at the food truck talked about the Japanese-Mexican almost fusion.
The textures, the flavors, it's a yummy, yummy combination.
That's good.
Oh yeah, that's the best thing ever. I want to try yours.
Fresh and light, it's just summery and delightful.
I could eat this every day. Best sushi burrito in town.
Best sushi burrito in town. So what is sushi exactly? Says Yamira, we heard from Tsukiji Fish Market there in Japan, famous market that's moved recently. And we were just talking about how even in Japan, things are changing. The market's moved, made it a little bit harder for smaller players, better for bigger. And not as many Japanese, you were saying, are lining up to become sushi chefs. Why?
From what I understand, it's becoming an issue with younger people wanting to actually be chefs. It's such a difficult, rigorous kind of training that they'd rather not do it. And so,
especially in the Japanese context, where a very high standard is presumed, you have to meet it.
Absolutely. It's very militaristic from what I understand. So I think the Japanese culture, Japanese government's really trying to proliferate Japanese cuisine around the world, and they're holding competitions internationally just to see where other countries are at with their Japanese cuisine, trying to really spread Japanese food everywhere.
Hajime Sato, can you understand why it might be a little less popular to be a sushi chef? I mean, I always loved seeing the great sort of discipline and practiced skill of these guys, mainly guys, in Tokyo, but it is a lot of training required.
Yeah, I went through the apprentice and I was pretty beaten all the time, and I don't want me to do anything to my employees, but don't ask my employees, all right? But one of the things that we kind of just talked about is that the sushi burritos and the sushi this and sushi that, and if you really think about it, there's a lot of sushi chefs. But what is a sushi chef? That's a kind of weird question to ask, right? Just because you can roll the sushi, that becomes a sushi chef already? And because there's like thousands of sushi bars around in the United States or in Japan, but how many people actually has the skill to do what we used to do? So I think that's a question that we have to ask. And all the distribution we talked about, and these days, probably he knows that too, that the everything comes in a package if you want to. All the stuff pre-cut and packaged, everything. All you have to do is basically open the package and put it in the rice. And that is the culture of everything these days. So all the craftsmanship is lost. It's really sad.
What we've got on the table here in our studio at On Point is anything but prepackaged. It's just freshly made, just down the hall. And Seiji Emir has brought it in for us. I mean, very beautiful, elaborate things, very simple things. Kappamaki, just cucumber rolled. Describe what I've got here, Seiji.
It's a classic. It's one of the really authentically classic sushi pieces, which is basically cucumber wrapped in sushi rice and seaweed, a little bit of sesame seeds.
How long does it take for you to have someone behind the sushi counter, the bar at your restaurant, who can make this?
It depends on who's making it, but maybe like 20, 30 seconds or so.
Oh, but I mean training-wise.
Training-wise.
Can you hire somebody, off of, I don't know where, this morning and have them making it tonight?
You know, it's deceptively, it looks easy, but actually, since it's so simple, it's difficult. So depending on, again, the individual, it could take a day, it could take an hour, it could take months,
Let's go through some basics here. Everybody goes to the sushi place, they've got their soy sauce, some, have a full bath of it that they pour out. You've got your wasabi, sort of hot, green, wonderful paste on the side, the thin sliced ginger. I've got here some, really beautiful thing, maguro tataki here. If I'm going to eat this in the Japanese style, a little lemon on first, good.
Yep, squeeze a little bit of lemon on.
Wow, okay. That sounds beautiful. And then people want to put it in the soy sauce, but there's a way to do that. And there's a volume of sauce that you're really recommending here. Talk to us about how to do it.
Watching you actually eat the piece of maguro earlier, you did it perfectly. You just dunked the fish right in the soy sauce mm-hmm. upside down.
Not the rice, but the fish.
Exactly.
Yep.
If you put the rice in, it's going to crumble.
Yeah, fall apart in your hand and soak up so much soy sauce you can't taste the fish.
Right. And really it should be the perfect balance of your sour, slightly sweet sushi rice, mm-hmm. your fish or vegetable, whatever protein or product, and then the sodium of the soy sauce.
Mm-hmm. You've got a little – is there a little wasabi under the fish fillet here?
So for that one, there's a touch of wasabi. When we mm-hmm. make nigiri sushi, mm-hmm. there's a touch of wasabi mm-hmm. that we put right underneath
between
the fish.
Between the rice and the fish. So mm-hmm. so what's – the wasabi that we all know, the green paste, is for people who like extra or you really don't need it at all? It's just there for show?
It's a good question. I think it's just a practice that started happening. It's – depending on the fish – you can add a little bit more wasabi. Really, it's there to act as a natural antiseptic and antibacterial.
Mm-hmm.
Add a little bit of a refreshing quality to mm-hmm. exactly the piece that you're eating. You don't necessarily want to make a nice muddy mix with the soy sauce and mm-hmm. the wasabi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. A lot of people who put it into their soy sauce and sort of mush it all together.
Exactly.
Maybe that's going too far.
For me, you don't really get to taste the fish or whatever it is that you're trying to eat. So...
And then next, and Hajime, I'll come to you, but I've got to keep eating here a little bit. It's just too delicious.
Got this. That's nice. Where's mine?
Sorry. You got a whole crew waiting to feed you.
You guys are mean.
Yeah, sorry, we are mean. Hamachi crudo here. So it looks like nigiri, but this hamachi is a yellowtail, right?
Yep. And so these are kind of the more contemporary styles of sushi mm-hmm. that I want to show you. I think something that Nobu mm-hmm. made popular whenever he started Deki and a half ago or so, where you actually top the pieces of nigiri mm-hmm. so it's one sufficient bite. The hamachi crudo we sell at the restaurant, it's got yellowtail, basil oil, balsamic, and a grape tomato with a little bit of salt lemon.
I mean, it's incredible. It's clearly sushi, but it's not that wasabi way. This almost tastes like something you could eat in Tuscany with the balsamic and the basil oil in there.
Right. Something a little different.
If you're going to eat really, really fine sushi, an Italian restaurant in Tuscany. I don't know. Hajime Sato, Seiji Miura, standby callers for the two of you. Christian in Norfolk, Virginia. Christian, thank you for calling. Sorry, I've got yellowtail on my mind. What's on yours, Christian?
Hi, Tom. I was exposed to sushi for the first time in the late 80s. It was all so delicious and well-prepared. And now, everywhere I turn, there's like all-you-can-eat sushi buffet, and it's factory-made. And I'd just like to hear their thoughts about where this trend is going, and how do we really find those great classic sushi restaurants?
Hajime, great classics versus all-you-can-eat sushi. I mean, you know, if it's all-you-can-eat, it's probably a lot of prepackaging going on. How do you, when you come into town, how do you figure out which sushi bar you want to go to?
First of all, I have to mention about this. What is, why do you go to the sushi bar? To me, what's local? And there's a term called shun in Japanese, which is like what's basically local and what's in the season. And if you go to the sushi bar and if you ask that to the chef, and if chef doesn't even know what's in the season locally, then I wouldn't even go there. The problem is that these days that a lot of people just production, you probably, all this stuff is coming from Asia or somewhere already in the production, and there's no seasonality, there's no local, like what's in front of you mm-hmm. kind of thing. So mm-hmm. if you go to the all you can eat sushi, obviously you don't want to just go there. I mean, why you want to go to all you can eat sushi? But you just go to the sushi bar and ask the questions, different kind of questions. Where is this fish come from? And how is it made? And is it seasonal? Is it local? Stuff like that. And if chef cannot even answer those questions, then I say that's not good. Because as you know, if you go to the restaurant in Japan, first thing you ask is what? What's in season?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. And when is the time that you say that in the United States? Not that much, right?
Well, there are more and more restaurants now where that is more common, but still it's a tiny minority when you look at the whole scene here.
Right. There's a farm to table a lot and yep. the produce, but at the same time, the fish-wise, so many people don't know fish are extremely seasonal. But these days, people have to have maguro all the time. People have to have hamachi all the time.
Yeah.
Those are the things that farm-raised or like processed somewhere. It's not good at all. You know, why can't we get local, people serving local fish?
I guess part of the reason might be that people expect certain fish at a certain, when they go to a sushi restaurant, they want something. They don't want to, some people don't want to think about the season. I mean, in my years in Japan, I would go to the sushi bar, and very often I would just ask the sushi chef to feed me what he thought was best that day. I didn't ask for things. I asked him just to line it up, you know, as many pieces as made sense for whatever the meal was. But he made the decision because he knew.
Well, right. Well, I mean, to the point, yes. But at the same time, asking a question like that and make the sushi chef, like, think about it a little bit, that's number one. And number two, then even this, the restaurant scene is changing. Like, you never ask that kind of stuff for a regular American restaurant. But now you ask, like, hey, what's local? What's in the season of produce? Oh, people are using that. That's awesome. And if we can actually implement that to the seafood a little bit more, you know, not just sushi, but the, you know, it's just any kind of seafood, that's going to change it. And of course, you know, you can say omakase, like, hey, you know, chef, whatever. But at the same time, if you have a little bit of knowledge of that, to say, hey, I heard that the, I don't know, sea urchin in season right now. Hey, do you have that locally? That's awesome. And that'll change the sushi bar from the customer point of view. I think that's good. Right.
That's pretty great. Omakase, that is, hey, give me what's best. Give me what's fresh. Seiji, how do you find the best place in town if you roll into a new place that you don't know well? How do you figure it out? I guess you just got to ask and ask.
I think, yeah, it's all word of mouth. You got to find maybe a local that you trust and knows the food scene and just go from there. Like Hajime is saying, ask the chef questions. He's exactly right. Seasonality is definitely lost on the modern day contemporary sushi chef because everything is prepackaged. You can make everything from the freezer, so to speak. So that is definitely a good way to ask questions at the sushi
from the freezer. Sounds really disappointing somehow. Here's another from Cafe Sushi. This is crispy tuna tobanjan roll, shrimp tempura. I see. Yeah, I see the little tempura fried crust on there and green avocado, I guess. So echoes of California roll. What else is in here?
Just a spicy tuna mix on top. You know, we're using tobanjan, which is classically a Chinese kind of spice mix. A little cilantro and lime juice.
Cilantro, not a classically Chinese.
Definitely not. So again, this is...
Oh, wow, that's great. And crispy.
Kind of more of the Americanized, contemporary sort of sushi styles that you would see these days.
I've got cilantro in my sushi. Mary in Boulder, Colorado. Mary, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Cilantro, that just isn't right. It's wrong.
Hey, tastes pretty good, Mary. Tastes pretty darn good. Sorry to tell you.
I'm a traditionalist. I've been eating sushi since I was 13 in 1975.
Oh, you're a pioneer.
After my parents, after my parents met a Japanese businessman on a flight from San Francisco. And he taught us how to eat sushi, even before there were sushi restaurants in Detroit. My question, apropos to Seiji's comment about everything's frozen, scientifically and in terms of health, I have read that it's actually better to eat previously deeply frozen raw fish because of the issue of parasites. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely parasites are an issue. For certain types of species of fish, you need to freeze the fish prior to actually serving it. We have a super freezer.
Like a flash freeze kind of thing.
Yeah, something that freezes fish at negative 60 degrees. So it keeps the integrity of the texture, flavor of the fish, but it will kill all parasites. The frozen products that Hajime and I are also talking about are the processed, already filleted fish that they're pretty ubiquitous, and you find a lot of places that you just open up a cryovac, and then you have your fillet, and you can start cutting it to serve sushi.
How widespread is that, and what percentage of sushi sold in America do you think starts that way?
Oh, 80, 90% these
really?
Days? What
really?
Do you think? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's getting worse and worse. No, it's horrible.
Can you tell Hajime when you put it in your mouth if that's what you've got or not?
It's kind of hard to tell these days because the frozen, I mean, technology is getting better and better. And there is a technology these days. They put those fish in carbon monoxide and refurbish the fish. I don't know if you heard of it. Oh, yeah. And yay, this is the country who can allow that. So a lot of fish, hamachi, they're doing that. And izumidai, they're doing that. Tuna, a lot of cheap tuna is basically carbon monoxide. And we kind of didn't talk about what's, you know, then parasites and stuff, but you had to really talk about that kind of like really prepackaged, horrible, chemically treated fish that we're eating too.
We'll come back and talk about sustainable fish. Not too much about carbon monoxide, I hope, but it's out there. We're looking at the past, present, and future of sushi with Hajime Sato from Mashko Restaurant in Seattle, Seiji Imura from Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Sushi Roll song from Holly Christina behind us here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. A sushi roll.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. Forget about digging through stacks of paperwork. This completely online process lets you safely share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. Using a phone or tablet, you can get approved for purchase or refinance in just a few minutes. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We like the teriyaki chicken and the prawn and the crab. We like nigiri and the tuna. We don't mind what we have because everything is yummy at the sushi shop.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the past, present, and future of sushi, the once exotic Japanese specialty now all over America and the world. We've got beautiful sushi on the table. I'm sorry if it makes you jealous, but it's here and I can't help it. And yes, we've tasted a bit. Seiji Imura's brought it in from Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He joins us today. And from Mashiko, a sushi bar restaurant in Seattle, Hajime Sato is with us. He's particularly focused on sustainability in sushi. You can join us this hour. What's your question for our sushi chefs? Have you had it in Japan versus the U.S.? Seen a difference? What's that? And what are the boundaries of sushi? We've got a photo gallery at our website of some weirdly awesome, trendy sushi hybrids. And I'm talking, sushi burgers, sushi cake, sushi donuts there. Sushi has really sprawled all over the place. We've got a lot of questions that have come in online. I want to go to them. And I have to address some more of this beautiful sushi right in front of me. I've got a Hirame Kobujime in front of me here from Cafe Sushi. This is what? Fluke? And it's combo cured. What does that mean?
So, and you don't need to dip it in soy sauce.
Good. So beautiful.
So talking about maybe the future sushi and referencing Hajime too, mm-hmm. I think he would appreciate this. This is Wild Local Fluke, Atlantic Fluke. And I think there's going to be a tendency to go back to the classics. And so it's a very classic curing method where you take giant kelp kombu and you press the fish in between it, and it really soaks in
between
that flavor.
Between sheets of kelp.
Yep.
Is kelp very flavorful? I don't think of it as having a strong flavor, but it's a deep flavor, I suppose.
Very deep. So it's one of the half component of dashi, mm-hmm. which gives you a really nice, strong kind of umami flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really soaks in that flavor. It also changes the texture. It almost becomes like cured meat.
It's I can very see that. Savory. It's almost got that Parma ham kind of look to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Not cut that thin, but something with the pressing.
Yep. And so I just put a little bit of wasabi oil, a touch of salt, and then fresh bonito flakes.
Bonito flakes. Bonito is tuna. Uh-huh. Flakes because what? It's smoked and fermented and dried into these. Is that right there?
It
that's
looks
a former
like
tuna. It looks like a piece of wood.
Exactly. So it's bonito tuna that gets filleted, smoked, and then inoculated with a mold to petrify it, basically, and aged.
Okay.
And then after it's done aging, there's a special plane that you use to
shave it.
Like
a carpenter's plane. You're shaving it on almost
exactly.
a carpenter's plane. Oh, that's
so
wild. So you get these
like
little
that.
Flakes coming off. It's amazing to me that that was once a supple tuna swimming in the sea, and you get these beautiful bonito flakes. And is that what I've got already here?
Exactly. And then I just sprinkled a little bit of that on top.
Gosh, that's just fantastic. Just fantastic. Tom in Gloucester, Massachusetts. There's a fishing town for you. Tom, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I think the chef made a good point about getting it seasonal. Like sea urchin won't be the same. It's one season in Maine. I recently got it in Chinatown in Boston, and it ended up being from Chile. And it just didn't live up to my expectations. You know, when you get really fresh sea urchin, it just blows your mind away.
Yep.
It's just like having really good Noray or seaweed with shrimp. And it's, you know, it's just really hard to get it fresh, and you really have to ask if it's fresh and where it's coming from in a situation like that, because it just won't be that good.
I'm going to hold sea urchin right there, because that's going to be a great gateway to talk about sustainability. So, Tom, I really appreciate your call from Gloucester. Let me just hold that for a second. I've got other direct questions for the two of you. Earlier on, Hajime Sato, you talked about a sushi robot, and Rachel writes to us on Twitter. Wait, sushi robot? What is that?
So sushi robot is basically, you don't have to make rice. Since you're talking about how rice is important, and it takes a long time to even make a really good rice. And what if that the robot can make, basically cook the rice and vinegar it and salt and sugar and all the stuff and put it in the raw form, then you don't have to do anything. Then all you have to do is prepackage the fish and put it on top. Yay.
So the work is deeply reduced, and so that made it much more popular in Japan. Dave writes to us, sushi is like pizza to me. I could eat it every day. This is more wasabi. But in Japan, I mean, this is not an everyday meal, Hajime.
No. People think that, and people ask me that under sushi bar, too. Like, oh, you eat sushi every day? And I say, like, oh, you're American, so you eat the steak every day.
Right. No. Nobody. Yeah, most people do not have it every day. Amber writes to us. She says, love the melt-in-your-mouth texture of yellowtail. Is that a specific type of fish, she asks, or cut? Very simple. Amber says, what is yellowtail? Seiji?
It is its own type of fish. Yellowtail hamachi. Mm-hmm. It's just within the jack family.
Jack?
Well, technically, yellowtail is hiramasa. It's a little different fish. And this really mouth-coating oil is actually ranched fish. That's actually, I'm sorry for saying this, you guys eat it, but the it's not really produced right. It's not a wild caught, and that's why it's got a lot of fat in it. It's not natural, but it is really good. That's why people eat it. So that's a mouthfeel of the ranched fish that produced with a lot of fat in their feed. That's what it is.
Right. So when you get yellowtail, is it ranched all over the world, or is it ranched near Japan?
Oh, absolutely.
All over the world.
Yes, yes, and yes. And probably 99% of the so-called hamachi that we consume, we don't carry it here in Seattle, but the is ranched, period.
So this isn't wild caught. This is ranch, Hajime doesn't like the way it's ranched, but it's certainly got that mouthfeel.
Yeah. You know, I do agree with Hajime. We serve this product and it is a ranch product from Japan. And there's also species yellowtail that you call it a different name in its progression of maturity. So there's like Inada, which is a young type of yellowtail that you can get wild, and then that grows into Buri, which is the larger size in the winter, where it's like really nice. So you can get sort of like a wild variety of this type of fish, but I would say probably 98% of what you'd find in sushi restaurants, especially in the States, would be the farmed variety.
John in Charleston, South Carolina. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm very well with all the sushi on the table. Thanks.
I'm on Pavlov's dog listening all right now. I'm drooling all over the place. One of two questions. One is, are the West Coast sushi people, are they worried about the reaction from, Fukushima?
The nuclear power plant?
The nuclear power plant out there. And has anybody ever done fugu sushi? Because if you ever go into a sushi place and ask them, you know, about their food and stuff like that and the fish, where it's from, you always say, well, are you licensed to do fugu? And I was wondering if there's any East Coast places that would do fugu sushi.
Yeah, fugu, you're talking about the poisonous puffer fish.
With
the big spines on it, blowfish, that looks so dramatic. Well, let's go to that first. Is that served in the U.S., Hajime?
So it's kind of funny that I have a fugu in my restaurant right now. Huh. But here's the deal. So you guys can actually get it over there. It's coming from Maryland. and it's a little boat that catch stuff for us. At this moment, we are getting directly from the boat.
I had Maryland. No idea it was off Maryland.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a blowfish that's caught. This is in the season right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is the bycatch from other fish. And it's not poisonous. So you can actually eat it without the license.
Okay.
And you can have sashimi. I had fugu in Japan several times.
Mm-hmm.
And the texture, flavor is really similar. And again, you don't have to go to this poisonous fish and you're going to have to spend like thousands of dollars just because we're from Japan and license. You can get it domestically. And if it's in a season, it's wonderful. It was bled well. Yep. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I had it in Japan. Mighty tasty, but you want to be very careful where you have it. That's true. Kim in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Kim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question about sushi etiquette.
Okay.
Well, if you go into a nice sushi restaurant, are you required to eat the sushi with chopsticks? Because I just can't master those. I just have not been able to.
I think this is your lucky day, Kim. I think it's your lucky day in that case. Stand by. Seiji, I mean, here I am. I feel caught red-handed. I've got one. Your summer vegetable roll looks so gorgeous in my hand. No chopsticks going on here. What about Kim's question?
I think it's totally perfect etiquette to use your hands. It's finger food. Mm-hmm. There's no taboo about using chopsticks, especially at a nicer sushi restaurant. It'll just demonstrate that you know how to eat sushi.
Mm. Your vegetable roll, avocado, you got something pickled in here.
Pickled daikon radish.
And eggplant? Do I taste eggplant in
here? Uh-huh. It's been marinated.
Wow. Mm. That is pretty delicious.
Thank you.
Just amazing. Hajime, talk to us about sustainability. Where do you draw the line on what you serve and what you don't know?
First of all, we already talked about what's in season, what's local. That's number one. But, of course, what's local doesn't mean everything is good because we have the farm-raised salmon around here that I wouldn't touch. First, I would always say, number one, do not eat anything endangered. But what is endangered? So many people don't know, let's say, eel, that unagi is super endangered right now. But people don't know anything about it
mm-hmm.
because probably not cute enough. It's not panda or whale.
Right.
You know. But at the same time, you have to pay attention that that's part of the ecosystem. So that's number one. Number two, what is a fishing method? How do we catch those fish? Because if it's a huge amount of the fish caught on the side, that's where you're going to waste.
Where they're using giant nets and wasting a lot of what they pull in.
Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And this is the third part. It's kind of interesting. I just read the article about Oceana went to the sushi bar in New York, and literally 94% of the fish they're served are wrongly labeled. And first, before and foremost important thing is the fish you're eating actually that fish? Because so many fish are mislabeled. And
in all kinds of restaurants, not just sushi bars.
Oh, absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And 30% of any seafood is mislabeled. So from that point of view, just knowing what it is, and unfortunately, and you told me about like, oh, omakase, great. But at the same time, consumer has to know a little bit more about like what you're eating so that you can pressure the fishmonger, pressure the sushi chef, like, hey, where is this coming from? Then it's going to change a little bit of that. And number four, sorry, getting a little long, but the do not waste, meaning every fish we get and we make a stock out of the bones and even the chi, mm-hmm. probably the bloodline, that says, I don't know if he uses it.
Mm-hmm.
People say to waste it. We actually cure it and brine it and reuse it. And even the head of the fish, we use it. And anything the local boat catches it, catch any fish that they don't want to sell, right? Like, I don't know what kind of fish is it. I caught it and I'm going to throw it away.
Yep.
They call me and say, hey, can you do something about it? And I use it. I use everything. And that is the key to sustainability.
Do your customers like everything? Are there some fish that they say, wait, what's this? The texture doesn't please me.
Absolutely. Sometimes I have a difficulty eating it, but at the same time, we have to change this. You know, going to the sushi bar and you get maguro and hamachi and farm-raised salmon, and it's not a fast food chain restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, everything, like you go to LA, Boston, you know, New York, it's exactly the same fish. And we got to change it. It's not fast food. It's, well, fast food oriented, but it should be more local. It should be more paying attention to what you're eating. And that's what really frustrates me. And sometimes, you know what? You have to get used to it. And I said, okay, let's get used to it.
Let's get used to it. What about sea urchin? Our caller, Tom from Gloucester, was asking about sea urchin. I see it's on the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch list here.
Uh-huh.
But do you serve it?
Yeah, we only serve the sea urchin locally from the diver directly. That's it. Only we serve from the end of the October to February, and we literally crack open the shell of the sea urchin and serve it in the shell. And if I cannot get it from the diver, then I don't even serve it. So we don't have sea urchin. Again, if it's not in the season, let's not eat it. You don't want to eat the tomato in the middle of the winter time because it's not good.
Yeah. Wow. We've got tamago to finish with, your kind of egg Swedish, sweet flavored egg sushi. Finished because it's so rich, says you?
I think most people like to finish with a tamago because it's slightly sweet, it's rich. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a nice cooked bite to finish off with. It's almost like a custard.
Mm-hmm. Delicious. What about our caller's Fukushima question, the nuclear power plant that went up? And then, of course, there was radiation. But do sushi chefs say, oh, I don't want anything caught off of that coast of Japan?
From what I understand, in talking to various people, the effect of the radiation shouldn't really affect the seafood stock. I'm not an expert, so I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
The fish that we do get from Japan is from below, like Tokyo area and below. I don't know if that makes a difference.
One more thing that I want to talk about with that regards is that the lower carnivores, like big fish, tends to store more radiation, more mercury, stuff like that, right? And so many people go for a lot, like, oh, bigger the fish, the better, like, oh, kind of thing. And it's like, we should be eating plankton feeder, like, macro, sardines, smelt, stuff like that. They don't even live long to store those chemicals and radiations and all the stuff.
So you're really changing our menu. You're changing our menu for sure, Hajime.
Well,
big time.
If you really think about this, that was the tradition of the sushi. We used to eat maguro and hamachi all the time. So if you really think about it, I'm changing it back. I'm not changing it. I'm changing it back to tradition.
Seiji, you ready to go in that direction?
Sure.
Over the years, you think that's the way sushi is going to go?
I absolutely agree with Hajime. I think he's got such a great head start on the future sushi, but it's going to go back to things that are local, wild, sustainable, things that we can support. Things that are going to be cheaper. This is going to be a luxury item once again because the prices of seafood's going up, up and up every year.
What a great and delicious hour of learning and and eating here. And wow, we see a future, even if it's going to be a different future for sushi. Hajime Sato at Mashiko in Seattle. Hajime, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Seiji Imura with Cafe Sushi in Cambridge, Massachusetts. First class place, delicious today. Thank you so much for bringing it all in.
Thank you so much, Tom.
We've got a little tutorial from Chef Seiji Imura you can look at this afternoon. Sign up for our Facebook newsletter. You'll get it. This is On Point.